Starting Parsha Bo'eiro. Here's how it starts. Ches Yud Beis. Now, we all know how the Parsha starts, that Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of last week's Parsha had a complaint and ended up being answered by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And things were good from then on. We start off the Makos in this week's Parsha. After going through Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron Ar, after going through Kadosh Baruch Hu explaining who he was and why this needed to happen the way that it did, the Makos start. We have Dom, we have Tzardeya, we have Kenan. I spoke about Dom 2 years ago. I spoke about Tzardeya last year. I decided I'd go straight. Let's go straight into Kenan. There are 5 different parts of Kenan that I want to go through. Number 1 is where the word Kenan comes from and how it stems, where that word, why we call lice Kenan. We're going to go into what are they? What were the Kenan that we're talking about over here? We're going to go into the Mida Keneged Mida, why Kenan had to be brought. What was the point of bringing the Kenan? We're going to go through whether it affected the Jews as well as the Egyptians or just the Egyptians. We're going to talk about the tachlis of the idea behind the lice itself. And finally, we'll deal with the onesh, the actual punishment that's there. So technically, those are 6 things, but nobody was counting. So it worked out well. Ches Yud Beis. Hashem said to Moshe, Emor al Aaron, say to Aaron, Eteyes Matzcha, stretch out your staff, the hachas al ha'aretz, and hit the dirt of the ground. It will be lice, kinim, throughout all the land of Mitzrayim. Yasu came, they did so, they ate Aaron as Yod, Mateu, the hachas al ha'aretz, he hit the dirt of the ground. Matia kinam ba'adam lehema, this kinam was by the Adam, and they didn't call up our tell you, kinam b'chol ha'aretz Mitzrayim, all the dirt of the land became kinam throughout the land of Mitzrayim. So quick. At the next pasuk, it talks about the chartumim and how the magicians, these necromancers, the hieroglyphic experts of Mitzrayim, were not able to make the kinam, and they said, etzba lokimhi. That's a shir for 6 years from now when I finish off the makos and I'm done with that. So if you want to hear about that, that'll be later on. For now, we're just going to deal with what the makah of kinam was. So here we deal. We call the makah kinam, but when Aaron hit the ground, he created kinam. Kinam, not kinim, from the ground. What's with the switch? So Rashi answers simply put, kinam is a swarm of kinam. That's the easy answer, right? You're dealing with a swarm of kinam. Ibn Ezra seems to say the same thing as well. There was just a swarm of kinam. But the Midrash understands it in a different way. And for that reason, that switch from kinam to kinam, we are going to see over 20 examples in the Midrashim as to how that word changes everything. Literally, it changes everything about this pasuk and what kinam represented. So that's that. But the assumption we're going to go under to begin with is that we're dealing with billions and trillions of tiny little bugs that are going throughout the land. Rabbi Victor Miller and Rabbi Hirsch say the word kinam comes from the word kan. A kan is a base, something that's on the grounding. That it also can mean kain, something that should be so, as if vayihi kain, and it was so. Konain is also to be established as in. So maybe the pshat behind kinam, says Rabbi Hirsch and Rabbi Victor Miller, is that kinam lice attach themselves to their host, they grab onto the host itself, and they cause sores to become infected by literally boring themselves in, and they become a con, they become the base for where they're trying to do. They're going on top, and they're becoming like that, and that's what kinam are, that they create their own base. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says that this makah was different from every other makah in the fact that it was a bria chadasha. This was not normal lice. It was a brand new creation that no person or shade or a demon could have created, and thus v'haya l'chinim, it was brand new kinim that others didn't have. That's another way of looking at it. We're going to have to understand that when we go through the whole parsha. So let's go. First, there's a massive machlokus what this maka was, and I know the same way last year I said that Tzardeya refers to frogs and crocodiles and all the different reptiles, and I spoke about that last year. This year as well, kinim is a big shaila. The Rashbam, the grandson of Rashi, and one of the first we shown him to write about this idea, says that it included lice and fleas. Lice and fleas. Now the difference between them, simply put, is lice are tiny, tiny little bugs. Fleas jump. The fleas are going to jump. So we have jumping creatures, and we have little tiny bugs that attach themselves to your hair, etc., and cause diseases to come in. This happens to be, that Rashbam is really a Tosfos. It's possibly it's the Rashbam. The Rashbam was one of the Balei Tosfos. Possibly, that was Tosfos in Shabbos Yud Beis and Aleph. Here's what it says. The question of the Gemara is, are you allowed to kill kinim on Shabbos? Are you allowed to kill kinim on Shabbos? The Gemara says, it's machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer says, you're chayim. is if you kill Kenan. If you kill Kenan, you're chayiv. The Rabbanan say, you're potter. Now this is the major nafkamina. What are Kenan? Now if we know what Kenan are, we'll know whether you're chayiv or potter. We hold like the Rabbanan that you're potter for killing Kenan. But that is a major nafkamina. What are Kenan? So the Rimi Orleans, brought down by Tosos, says that it's Shchora HaKofetzes. Shchora HaKofetzes is a jumping flea. It's a flea, and that's what you're allowed to kill, that the Rabbanan hold is potter, and the Rebbe Eliezer says is going to be chayiv. But a louse that crawls around on the ground, a little louse that you have in your hair, everyone agrees that you're chayiv for. That's the Rimi Orleans. You kill a louse on Shabbos, you're chayiv. You kill a flea on Shabbos, machlokes. Some say that it's potter. Potter of a louse, but it's still potter. Rabbeinu Tam argues that it seems Akina is referring to actual life, not fleas. And they're described, he describes them as if they're living in your hair. It mentions Kina as living in one's hair. Fleas don't normally attach to human hair. So it makes sense, it's referring to lice. So he said, what about fleas? He said, fleas, everybody agrees, you're chayiv for killing. So that's an unfortunate little turn of events. One Baltosa says you're chayiv for killing lice. The other Baltosa says you're chayiv for killing fleas. Now, we got a problem. You're allowed, it's potter of osir, possibly even mutter, to kill kenim. But what are kenim? Are they lice or are they fleas? That's already a shiloh. We don't have an answer to that shiloh, but that's where it comes from. That means, in our pasuk, you could translate kenim as lice, you could translate them as fleas. The Rashbam said it's both. That both of them were there, both of them are killing. The Orachaim HaKadosh was medayik, that the Egyptians were filled with lice while the animals were filled with fleas. Makes sense, right? That makes a lot of sense to be able to go through. It could be that both had both, that there were fleas and lice on both animals and on people, but he says it makes more sense that way. The Ketava Kabbalah says that we're a nation that's compared to the dust of the earth. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram Avinu, we're going to be like the Afar Ha'aretz, we're going to be like the dust of the earth, right? So when the Egyptians subjugated us, the dirt fought back. He says then that it can't be referring to lice, because lice don't form in the ground. Lice form in your hair, right, underneath the skin, whatever, through little eggs, and therefore it must be a maka of fleas, pinworms, ringworms, and gnats. You ever had pinworms or ringworms? You don't have to admit to it. I'm just saying, you can't think of a worse maka. That's unbelievable, right, to have them through. But you can't. I don't want to hear that then. So there's something that's bad, right, and all of those that are there. Says the Ksav HaKaboah, that refers to those animals. Those are the types of things that are there. So he adds on that the Ksav HaKaboah takes out lice, but adds in all the others, but definitely there seems to be there. Now, according to Tana de Belio was written by Rabbi Nathan, based on Eliyahu HaNavi. He says that there were 14 different types of huge lice, ranging from the size of chicken eggs to goose eggs. That's how big the lice were. You ever seen a louse before up close? Think of how big these things are as they go through there. That's how big the lice were. The Mi'amloi says 24, but listen to this shot, it's unbelievable. The Shach says the reason why the number is 14 is because it's the gematria of Yad, because the lice showed the true hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Chartumim admitted to the Etzba of Hashem. They admitted there was a finger of God, but they wouldn't admit to the hand. But there was a hand full of lice over here. That's the Shach. Now, in Perek Zayin, Tana de Belio says that there are 14 types, and he says the following. There are Yarkunim, Kfuyim, Kfuchos, Svifin, Yale Mayim, Nifchadrin, Yale Sodai, Nemola, Avi Otzel, In Kinemachshov, Kivre Chikiki, Buki. Those are the 14 altogether. I think I might have missed one of those. 3, 6, 9, 10, 11, 12. I might have missed something over here. It could be that there was something over here. But regardless, I don't remember. I might have put the parentheses, the commas in the wrong place. Regardless, we have Avram Aaron Friedman of Chup. If you ask me who that is, I have no idea. But Chup, you'd assume, is a city in Europe. Says the gematria of all 14 of them is 4,711, which he says is the same amount as Perek Ches, Pasuk Yud Gimel.
Did you verify that?
So the truth is, I did, and Ches Yud Gimel is 4,511. And it's possible I was off by a race, but there was no way I was going to do it again. So I have no idea what to do. So at the end of the day, it seems to be the same, and let's assume that I I messed up on the ratio over here, but it is absolutely amazing that if it's even close to each other, we're dealing with new things, and that they learned it out from over there, regardless. The Hayyul Kinim, Rabbeinu Ephraim says, the Kinim is missing the Yud in the Pasuk. If you look up on top, I wrote that originally, the Hayyul Kinim, there's no Yud. In the second Pasuk, Kinim has a Yud, Kinim, there's no Yud anyway. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says, the Yud was missing here because there were 10 kavin of lice for every single Egyptian. Now, what is a kav? A kav is 4 log. A log is 6 basin. That means there were 24 eggs worth of lice for every Egyptian that lived in Mitzrayim. That's not that much, if you think about it. I'm just saying. But if you have 24 kavin of lice on the person, right, on every Egyptian, then it's a lot. To think of 24 kavin.
Each louse was the size of an egg.
Exactly. And especially if they were bigger, then that might scare the living daylights out of me. Either way, there seems to be a little bit of a steer here. We've been learning up and saying that the lice were tiny, as normal lice are, or fleas are tiny, or these bugs are tiny. That's how you push it, understand it. But then it seems that these were supposed to be huge, that these things were really, really big. So what's going on over here? Were they normal size? Were they small? Or were they some huge creatures that nobody ever seen before? I'm not going to get into the whole latte-ham business, whether they did magic or whether they did shaden, but that is another answer to the question, that shaden cannot gather creatures that are less than a normal size, and magic cannot create creatures that don't exist. So therefore, they have to be creatures that didn't exist, and they're big, and they have to be really small, so the shaden couldn't get them. But Rablev Dayan of Yerushalayim brings down the answers by saying, normally there are no lice on the ground. Lice don't exist on the ground. Like we said up above, there couldn't be lice. They don't. The Ksafa Kabbalah says they don't grow on the ground. But here, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the ground to be filled with lice, he filled the ground with tiny little lice. And then he made the humans, the people, get the huge lice. So the Kinim were on the ground. The Kinim were on the human beings. That's how he understands it, that these massive lice went on the people, and the ground was formed with all these tiny little lice. Fine, the Chiddush says that at first the lice was only on the people and only on the animals and not on the ground. Why? They didn't want to give the Chartumim any excuse when they said, oh, we can't make the lice. Because the thing about magic is that you can't do magic if your feet aren't implanted on the ground. We learned that from a Rashi in Sanhedrin. You know the Rashi in Sanhedrin with Shimon ben Shetach and the 80 witches? If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the greatest story of all time. But it's Shimon ben Shetach and the 80 witches. The reason why he was able to kill those 80 witches is because their feet weren't touching the ground. From there, we see that magic, he used that to prove something else entirely, by the way. He's talking about, like, Kevin Shahigid, Shubin Achozer Amagid is the concept, and he's like, see, that's that. And he's like, and let me tell you a story about Shimon ben Shetach and 80 witches. Very unlike Rashi, but it's an awesome Rashi, and it's huge. I think it's Mem Aleph from the Bays. I'd have to check it out. It's either Mem Aleph or Mem Dalet, I don't remember. But regardless, this idea is over here, that Khartoumim were on the ground, and they couldn't make the lice, and once they couldn't make the lice and said, we can't do it, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu filled the ground with lice. And the lice was done only after that. Gedemaral Diskin says that they didn't mix with each other, similar to what we said before. Fine. Why was this makkah made? Why do we have Kinim? What was the point of the makkah of Kinim over any other one? We talked about Dan, we talked about Tzveya. What was the makkah of Kinim? The Midi Keneged Midah, there's a bunch of answers given, 6 that I found. Simple answer is, this would stop the Jews from working all day long. If they couldn't stand on the ground because the lice was filling up the ground, there's no way they could work and make buildings and make these huge things one on top of the other. You can't do it. So if they couldn't do it, that would stop them from working. So the Midi Keneged Midah is, you want the Jews to work, they're not going to be able to work anymore. The Egyptians wouldn't be able to force them to be able to work, since the world was inundated with bugs. They couldn't do it. Number 2, the Medrash Rabbah says Midi Keneged Midah because they swept the dirt streets of Egypt. Since they made them sweep the streets of Egypt and go, and especially, says the Medrash, this Medrash Rabbah says that the men swept the women areas, and the women swept the men's areas. I think that's better for the men. But regardless, the dirt that they were sweeping and getting involved with all turned into life. That was the Midi Keneged Midah. You did this, we're making this happen. That's the idea of the Medrash Rabbah. The Medrash Gadol says, I think this is one, the famous one that most people know, the Egyptians would not allow the Jews to bathe. Since they wouldn't allow the Jews to bathe and they were disgusting and dirty and filled with lice, therefore, now they're going to have lice themselves. The Jews had such disgustingness and the lice all over them, they, the Egyptians, are now going to have the lice themselves. Keep that shot in your mind. It's going to answer up a huge shiloh for us. But keep that shot that we just said in mind. Medrash Gadol says a third one. If the people finished their quota of bricks for the day, and they had done everything they were supposed to do during the day, they went up to the Egyptian taskmasters and they asked them, can we go home? The Egyptians would tell them, no, go gather dirt so we can make new gardens in our fields. And they would go out to the fields and grab dirt and bring it over to the gardens to make new gardens. For that, the dirt turned into lice. The Shach says, It's not just for the Egyptians. The ground is being cursed. Why is the ground being cursed? Because when the Jews needed to plow the fields and make it easier to plant, the land wouldn't help them and claimed, I'm an inanimate object. I can't do anything. There's nothing I can help the Jews with. I can't make the plants grow any faster or the building any easier. And when Pisum and Ramses kept sinking into the ground, we know that Medrash, that the buildings that we're making kept sinking into the ground claimed, there's nothing I can do. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the fields animate. He brought life to the fields. He allowed them to become life to show you do have the ability, your Malach has the ability, right? And therefore, you have to accept your punishment as it is right now. The Kliyakar says the final answer, that they worked in disgusting places that were filled with dirt and disgusting things that were all out there, and therefore it was so hot, people were sweating buckets, so therefore the life came for all the disgustingness that was over there. That's the Mita Kenegan Mita. So we're now done with what the Maka was. We're done with the Mita Kenegan Mita of the Maka. Now, we've got a problem. Okay, Rashi says in Parshas Vayechi, Perek Mem Zayin Pasuk Chavtes, Yaakov Avinu refused to be buried in Mitzrayim. Why did he want to be buried in Maros Machpelah? Three reasons, says Rashi. He didn't want to be treated as a god. Does anybody remember that? Anybody remember those three? He didn't want to be treated as a god. That's one of them. Makas Kinim. He knew the ground was going to be there, and he didn't want Dilgul Mechilos. He didn't want to have to roll like Tzchias Nevesim and Eretz Yisrael. The second one, the Rashi mentions, really the first one the Rashi mentions. He was afraid that the ground was going to become Kinim. So what? He was Jewish. Why would Makas Kinim have affected Yaakov Avinu's body? Isn't it a Pala? But who cares? You'd assume that even the dead people that were Jews wouldn't be affected by Makas Kinim. And he said that's the reason why I don't want to be buried here. That was his number one reason in Rashi. Because of Makas Kinim. But it shouldn't affect him. He's a Jew. So it seems that Yaakov, you know, understood and knew that the Jews were going to be affected by lice. And that there was going to be a lice infestation in Mitzrayim and Goshen. That Goshen was going to be affected by this. I heard years ago from a rabbi named Rabbi Effie Goldman. He now teaches at Neve. He's at Neve now. And he thought, by the way, as a side note, this is just in case he's listening, because he listens to my shir once in a while. Rabbi Effie Goldman was the one who started the Chumash shir in base in the year 1997. Started giving shir on Thursday night at 12 o'clock at night. I took over after he left. It was 2.5 years that he gave the shir. So I have tons of notes from him for those first 2 years. It's a ton of stuff that I still have from Rabbi Goldman. So I still owe him a lot, because he's the one that got me into Chumash. Nobody else did. He's the one that did it. So it's a tremendous thanks just to him. But regardless, Rabbi Goldman said back then, the pshat is he thought that if he was treated like a Avodah Zarah, then his body could be affected by lice. That's a good pshat. I like that pshat a lot. I didn't see that anywhere, but it makes a lot of sense. The Shach says that the Goshen was definitely affected by lice. By every other Makkah, it refers to the land of Mitzrayim. It says, the Eretz Mitzrayim. It says that by everything. This Makkah, it says, Kol Afar Ha'aretz. All of the dirt of the ground is going to be affected. Says the Shach, that means not only the dirt of Mitzrayim, but the dirt of Goshen as well. That the Jews were also affected by the lice. The only land that was not affected was virgin soil. Soil that had never been worked before. That's why Yaakov was afraid. He was buried. That's not virgin soil. So he was afraid of being affected by lice. That was going to be the problem behind it. Why? So the Jews would know what happened, said the Shach. Lice are on the people. They're scratching all the time. But people, if they're in Goshen, and it's only happening in Mitzrayim, they won't know what's happening. The water they'll hear about. The frogs, they hear. But the lice, they might not know about it. So the Jews needed to see it as well. And saw, says the Shach, that even though their land turned into lice, they weren't bothered by the lice. The lice may have affected the ground and went all over the place, but they weren't bothered by it, meaning the lice did not bite the Jews or cause them any tzar. The Tam Vidah says that specifically as well.
So it still wouldn't answer why Yaakov was there.
Yaakov might have thought the dirt around him would have been lice, even if it wouldn't have affected his body. It would have been disgusting. And a genai to his body to be surrounded by lice. That's the only reason why, and that's the reason why he was going to worry about that. Okay, the Tom Bidas is something different. We'll skip that for right now.
It wouldn't affect the living, but it might affect the
dead. Maybe it'll affect the dead. You'd be thinking about such a... it's Yaakov, you know what I'm saying? Yaakov and Olam Eitz.
If you decompose into dirt...
But he was a mummy.
Was he?
He was spent 30 days getting around, 40 days, you know, making him into a mummy, whatever that means.
He was buried in Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
If he was actually buried in Mitzrayim, then maybe he wouldn't do that.
So it would have been an issue. No, they did. They did, yeah, 40 days. They took care of him. They embalmed his body. However it was, they had it. Yes, sir. 30 days of availability. What? In a way, yeah. Oh, maybe it'll still be effective in Nefesh. That's a good call. I don't know. This, I don't know. But now we get into the Rishonim. But Schwab brings down the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says in Zion Chav Dalet that the first three Makos, Dam, Sredi, and Kinim, affected all the Jews like it did the Mitzrayim. That Dam, Sredi, and Kinim affected all the Jews. Now, I will tell you, even though we're going to argue on this, we're going to bring down that Ibn Ezra. Nonetheless, the Ibn Ezra makes a lot of sense. There's no way that the Jews were not affected by a river that turned into blood, even if they drank it and it was water. Can you imagine scooping out with a spoon just viscous red blood from a river, pouring it into a cup, even if it turned into water when it went into your cup and you were ready to drink it? It's still disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. You just took it out of a bloody river. The fish that died still affected the Jews. You would assume. I would assume the smell was there. Yeah, I would assume. Why wouldn't it have? I would assume that the water was still stinky, but maybe not the stinkiest, but stinky, right, where the people wouldn't want to have done it. It's like, I don't mean to put it this way.
His hand in the water, okay?
Right, and it turned into water.
When the water touched his hand, is it water?
I would assume it's water, but even so, it's disgusting. You know what I'm saying? You're putting your hand in blood, even if it turns into water, it's disgusting. It's similar, it would just be saying, like, don't worry, the water of the Chicago River over there is going to be perfectly fine. No one's drinking from that water. It's half green. No one's drinking from it. But in theory, there are ducks inside there. They're not dying, and they're not six-legged, so you'd assume that they're okay, like Winky, right? You're not going to have that. You'd assume that it's okay. I would assume that. The Tzfardea, for sure it affected the Jews. The noise was everywhere. How could you not be affected by the noise? Even if the frogs weren't jumping on them, it would be strange. I'm sorry?
Wasn't in Goshen, Tzfardea.
Well, even so, the noise would have been in Goshen. Even if the frogs weren't there, not far, far away, and even if it wasn't exactly there, meaning it wasn't there, the frogs still would have been around. The Maka would have affected them in a way, says David Ezra. And Kinim, and I still agree with that in a way, Kinim as well, he says. Kinim as well, all of them affected over there, the Radvaz. Shout out to this Radvaz, the Egyptian Talmud Chacham, who's involved, lived in the late 1500s, in Tshuva 8:13, argues and says that you cannot believe that. That the Makos were specifically against the Egyptians and not the Jews, and the Psukim indicate that only the Egyptians were affected, not the Jews. So there's no way to believe what the Ibn Ezra says. But the Ritva, in his Pirush on the Haggadah, says the Kinim did affect the Jews, and he quotes Gemara. He quotes Gemara. That's what he says. But it did not cause them any pain, the Ritzvah says. It affected the Jews, but it didn't cause them any pain. The Rambam, in Pirush Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos, Parakei, says again, Kinim affected them, and not the others. The problem is, there is no Medrash like this. There is no Gemara. The Ritzvah quotes a Gemara. It doesn't exist. There's no Babli, no Yushami, no Medrash. Nothing that we have that indicates this. They don't give a Makor. The Rishonim just say that. The Meiri quotes the Talmud. The Talmud, that's what he quotes. He quotes the Talmud that you say, even if you want to say that Gemara means we have it as a tradition. Talmud means Gemara, our Gemara. Babli Yushalmi. The Miri quotes the Talmud and says, this is what it says, Rabbeinu Yonah on Pirkei Avos says, we have it as a Kabbalah in the hands of the Chachamim. A Kabbalah in the hands of the Chachamim that it affected, went into their land, but it didn't affect them the way it did the Egyptians. It's just crazy. So the Torah Shlema tries to explain it, Rav Nachum Kasher, one of the greatest farm of all time. Menachem Kasher says, it could be from the words Ba'adam uva'behema. At the end of that passage that I quoted before, Ba'adam uva'behema, only the people who acted like animals were affected by Kinim. The Kinim was there, but the Adam who were like Behema were affected by Kinim. The Adam who was Adam, Jews, would have been something different. Another possibility, and this is what I said, you have to remember this answer from before, is that the Jews already had Kinim. They were already filled with lice from their inability to bathe, and they're working in disgusting, sweaty places. The lice continued for the Jews, and now it was a major makkah for the Mitzrayim. There was a difference. The Mitzrayim got the brunt of the makkah. The Jews just continued having what they had. But that's why it says the kingdom affected them, because they never lost the kingdom that they already had.
Wasn't the makkah there?
No, but they had lice. The kingdom were still there. it wouldn't have been a new creation. The new creation would have been only been for the Egyptians. But that's a tremendous, tremendous idea. You should know, according to this pshat, the makkah, this makkah that happened, it seems that the lice did not leave them, says the Torah Shlema. It remained with them for the rest of their lives. They never lost Kenim. Kenim stayed with them. Of course, it could be that they all understood it from Yaakov Avinu. Where's the Medrash? Where's the Gemara? How do we know that the Kenim affected the Jews? Because Yaakov Avinu said it was going to affect them. Yaakov Avinu was afraid. Maybe that's the Makor. They're quoting it from a Gemara. There is no such Gemara, but that's a Gemara. Yaakov Avinu said, I'm worried about the Kenim affecting me. Maybe that's the Pshad, and that's the reason why, and he refused to be buried there because he knew Kenim was going to... Well, how did he know? Well, that's our Gemara. Our tradition is that that's there. How do we know what it did to the Jews? We assume it didn't hurt them. That's the Ritva. Shot. Yeah.
Israel today stole
Kenim. Kenim life in that way. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately. It's just, okay, we're not going to talk about bad things in our Israel. Truthfully, the truth is, Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, the Jews deserved these makos as much as the Egyptians did. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make sure that they didn't get them. Why? Says Rav Chaim Kanievsky that since all other makos were supposed to be copied by the Egyptian magics, right? And the Egyptians had to see that they couldn't copy certain things, so all the makos stayed away from the Jews to prove to them that the makos were given by God and not just a magician. So the makos went to the Egyptians and not the Jews, and that shows them, oh, the Jews are different. In Makas Kenim, the Egyptians couldn't replicate the makkah. It's the only makkah like that. So they already know that it couldn't be from a magician, that it's already from God. So therefore the Jews could be affected as well. You hear it? The Jews deserve to be affected by every makkah. But they couldn't be to prove to the Egyptians that they were getting it from God. This makkah, you didn't need that. So the Jews were affected by Kenim. That's a pshat brought down by Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Yeah.
They were able to recreate Barad and... else?
I don't know what they did because it sort of like stops by Aro, but I guess according to by Kenim, I'm sorry, but I guess according to this shot, then yes, that they were still doing all the others. Yeah, yeah, I guess that that's what they're doing, but I don't have a good answer for that.
They were affected by Moshe, the Jews, and they were all killed out.
They were killed out. That's without a question. Yeah, yeah, we'll get to that. I mean, yeah, eventually. I might be doing Choshech next week. All right, anyway. Well, it says Dobrishlin. Says the point of the lice was to show that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can instill fear with the tiniest of creatures. Anybody who's done Gittin, the Gemara about the Korban, knows in Daf Nun Vav when we're talking about Titus. Titus was affected by the gnat that entered inside his brain. That when Titus said, come and fight me yourself, a Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I have the tiniest of creatures, and even that creature will be able to kill you. You don't realize what I can do with the tiniest of creatures. That's the pshat of Kenim. Kenim is the smallest and tiniest of creatures have the ability to kill. He goes on, I guess, I don't know when Elenu Shabbat was written or when he wrote this pshat. I guess it was going on around the year 2002 by the anthrax scare in the U.S. Does anybody remember that? I mean, it's a long time ago. But then anthrax scare, and he goes on and he says, anthrax are tiny, tiny, tiny little particles, and yet nonetheless they're so deadly. You see that there are such things, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu puts it in the world, that there's such death. And Rabbi Yoshua Ben Levi, the Gemara Nedarim Mem Aleph, where Rabbi Yoshua Ben Levi says, when a person's time comes, everything rules over him, says Rashi, even gnats and flies. And that's the pshat behind Makas Kenim. Nothing's going to stop HaKadosh Baruch Hu from affecting you, no matter what, whether it's the biggest or the smallest. I've always understood that it's mamish, the greatest sign to me that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules the world are some of the things in the animal kingdom. The fact that the largest creature that has ever existed in the entire the span of time, go through dinosaurs. Let's say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed the world to have dinosaurs and all this. The largest creature that has ever existed throughout the history of time by two times the next size is the blue whale that still exists today. 160 tons. The next biggest creature is another type of right whale, which is 80 tons. No one comes close. There's nothing that comes anywhere close to what a blue whale, the size of the blue whale, Leviathan, I know, the Leviathan. But aside from Leviathan, nothing comes close to the blue whale. And what does the blue whale eat?
Krill.
Tiny little plankton and krill. The tiniest little animals in the sea. It's unbelievable. The whale, the biggest creature that has ever existed by two, only eats the tiniest little things that are out there in the world. It's crazy. It's literally crazy. It's an unbelievable shot. It gets me every single time. And this is the idea that we have to have bitachon, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only will take care of us, it's for this as well. Some say that that's the pshat behind HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mefarnes, means beitzei kinim, from the legs, the eggs of ice, all the way at carne raimum. And so the largest creatures, they call whatever it's called, like the biggest rhinoceros, some say that the biggest creatures are being fed by the Beit Zeikinim. Without the Beit Zeikinim, they wouldn't survive in whatever way. Whether it's used as bacteria that's able to help the animal survive or whatever it is, the Beit Zeikinim are used to be able to keep the biggest animals alive. That's what Yitzchak Zilber says. The Tachlis is to show that everything has a purpose, even the tiniest little thing. But the Malbim says there was no Tachlis to Kenan. It was purely an onish. There was no specific reason why this. There was no lesson. It was to be a bizoyan for the Egyptians for what they had done. And that's that. And the Malbim goes on and says how no matter what they did, the Khartoumim had ways of getting rid of lice, combing out their hair, cutting their hair, getting rid of whatever it was. They had medicines, shampoos, that you could get rid of lice. And nothing took care of these lice. So there's the pshat is, says the Malbim, because the Kaddish Baruch Hu wanted it to stay forever, it was purely a bizoyan and an onish, not for anything else. No tachlis, he says, just for that itself. Alright, let's go into the onish itself. What was the actual onish? I'm going to go through a lot of crazy, crazy things that are brought by the Medrash. Most of them learned out from that word kinam. When Aaron used his staff to hit the ground, the respondent even has to say a massive cloud of dirt, which then became lice, rose up in the sky and mushroomed over the entire country. The Miyamoli says all the people and animals that were in the direct vicinity of Aaron at that moment were filled with lice as if they had spent a whole year in a garbage dump. Just at once, they were filled as if they were just completely Oscar the Grouch all over. The Midrash Sechel Tov brings down that the lice bored into the ground to a depth of 2 amos, that's 3 feet, some say 5 amos, which is 7.5 feet. All the fields were affected by the lice. Nothing was able to grow normally. Even the dirt inside their homes became lice infested. The lice attached themselves to the Egyptians' clothing and their hair. They even entered their bodies. The Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Baal Turim, says it was hard to see, hard to hear, and impossible to smell. According to the Shach, they even dug in like ticks and drank from their blood, which gave them great pain and probably gave them Lyme disease as well. The Egyptians could not run away from the lice. The Miyamoli says that the water had no effect on the lice. So if they ran into water to try to get rid of the lice followed them in and kept biting them. And if not that, then the water lice grabbed a hold of them. And then they started getting eaten by the water lice itself. I'm sorry? No, it's back. It's back already. Then afterward, they rubbed their backs up against the wall to try to get rid of the lice. And all they did was they made their skin raw, sore, and bleeding, and nothing helped. That was even worse, because now the lice had more blood to have. I'm sorry?
Yalemayim.
That's what we said earlier in the 14. Those that furrowed beneath the skin could not be pulled out in any which way. They caused fever, rashes, debilitation, heart and arthritic symptoms, as well as many other diseases. That's brought down by Victor Miller. One would assume that epidemics went through the land quickly because of everything that was happening over here. Mishnah's Rabbi Eliezer says the lice felt like pins and needles in their skin. They couldn't get rid of that feeling. One louse is capable of having 5,000 babies. So there were crazy amounts of lice that were proliferating every single day, that even when lice died, there were more lice to take their place. Shoes were kept out of the home to keep the eggs out. Their clothes were laundered again and again. Everything else was combed, shaved, scalded. Yet still the lice grabbed onto their bodies and couldn't be removed. Sores developed all over their bodies. They were constantly bandaging themselves. Where Victor Miller says that the soil of Egypt was known for its fertility. Again, due to the Nile River. Again, if you look at Egypt on a map, you will see the entire thing is desert, except for the area where the Nile River goes up. It's literally a massive desert. No cities, no anything. It's a bunch of garbage. But then the Nile River and then the Nile Delta, where it goes off into the Mediterranean Sea, is this fertile, unbelievable land where the land is lush. You'll see it's all green. It's a beautiful land around the Nile River, total dust and nothing all around that area itself. I'm not saying you should have a smartphone to do that. I'm just saying you should. But either way, regardless, that's the idea. Says Rabbi Victor Miller, in the past, they worshipped the soil just like they did the Nile River and just like they worshipped their animals. But now, it became so filled with lice and the soil was abhorred. It was hated by everybody there, aside from being completely ruined. Once again, as I've mentioned last year and the year before, Rabbi Victor Miller has this shot, and I'm applying it over here to the lice. He says that the river becoming blood for superstitious Egyptians makes a ton of sense. That these superstitious Egyptians who knew that what did they do into the river? They took innocent babies of the Jews and threw them into the Nile River to kill them. The Nile River was punishing them with the blood of the Jewish babies that was on their hands. So the blood to them seems superstitious, like the kids were coming back through the Nile River. The frogs coming from the Nile River, to them, was the incarnations of the babies coming out and crying to them. That's the croaking that just killed them. The Egyptians couldn't deal with it. Because this, again, this is not a normal nation. This is a magic nation. This is a nation that believed these things happened. So the babies are coming back to haunt them. And the lice as well. The Jews that they had killed and buried in the dirt. The dirt was now coming back to haunt them. All of the slaves that they had treated like garbage and buried inside, now the dirt was coming back and incarnating itself, reincarnating itself, in order to bring itself back. That's how bad it was that they couldn't, they were haunted by the lice that were eating their bodies. I'm assuming, Ravidia Miller doesn't say that, but she used Ravidia Miller from years past. I'm assuming that that's the shot that happened by the lice as well. Nobody wanted to use the water anymore. Why didn't they want to use the water even to wash themselves with lice? They've been bloodied. These are fastidious people. These are not people that were easygoing, who were just like, they were perfectly fine with it. These people were rich, wealthy people, and they couldn't deal with it. Now they just couldn't handle it anymore. The maka was so bad and uncomfortable, they literally opened their eyes to a reality where maybe there was a God and the Jews had to be freed. That's what they mean by Elohim. There is a God here. There's something going on. They could not handle it. Okay, I only have a couple minutes. I'm going to save this first, and maybe we'll have time to go to Velikovsky and the Barbanel and the Malbim to try to go through. Here we go. Yalkut Ruveni says, the third of each set of makos. Y'all know, Ditzach Adash Be'achav. We're not going to go into the bays of Be'achav, the last one, Bechoros. But Ditzach is Kinen, Adash is Shrin, and Be'ach, right, is Choshech. The third makos of every set had no warning. Had no warning behind it, right? Not only that, says the Yalkut Ruveni. Each set of makos that they weren't worried about, they weren't warned about, came together all three times. It was not just Kinan. It was also Shchin and Choshech. Shchin and Choshech together with them. And that's why, by the way, if you look at that, you know the really colorful Haggadah, the one that was written by Gadi Pollack, I think? You know that Haggadah? It's the best Haggadah in the world. You need that Haggadah because otherwise Pesach is not worth it. It's worth it. It's just barely worth it. But it's an awesome Haggadah. It has all those cartoons everywhere of everything.
Oh, yeah.
He has in Kinim, Shchin, and Choshech, all three of them are dark. All three of them have lice. All three of them, the Egyptians have boils on them. Look at it. Look at the pictures. All three are happening at the same time. He learned this Yalkut Ruveni, or somebody did, right? And they put it all together. When they got lice, they also had boils, and it was also very dark. The greatest gematria in the world is brought by the Yalkut Ruveni. If you look on the bottom of the sheet, look over here. The way you read it is like this. Kinim, Chof Nun Mem, is Kinim. Shin, Shin Ches Nun, and Choshech, Ches Shin Chof. Now, if you look at it, you can go the other way as well. Go up as well. Kinim, Shin, and Choshech. The letters are interchangeable to the point where you can write Shin, Kinim, and Choshech any which way, this way, that way, however you want to go it. The letters match with one another to show that they were all connected to one another. All three makos happen at the same time. The Chassam Sofer says the three makos are connected to the avos. Kinim, because Avram Avinu said, Anochi offer the afer. I am dirt and dust. Shin for Yitzchak, who allowed himself to be ashes on the Mizbeach. I question that a little bit because Shin is not exactly ashes, it's boils. But maybe it has some shot that I'm not getting. Maybe the burning of the boils was considered like ashes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
The
thrown up in the air, that's a good call. The Piach HaKivshan that he threw up in the air, that's a good shot. And the third one is Yaakov. Yaakov is Choshech. Why? Because Haya Or, in his Chus, there was light among the Jews. Haya Or B'mosh Vosam, says the Chassam Sofer. And he is the sun in Yosef HaTzadik's dream. Remember Yosef HaTzadik's second dream? He's the sun, so he's the light for Klal Yisrael. All three worked in tandem to show Bnei Yisrael was through this of the Avos that they have these plagues. Very quickly, in 2 minutes, I'm going to be able to say this really quickly. There's a famous kofer by the name of Velikovsky. You don't have to look him up. He was a Russian kofer. He ended up Russia and kofer, but Russian kofer. When moving to Eretz Yisrael, he worked for somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. This guy did not believe in God, and that's why I'm saying, like, he was a Russian psychiatrist. He was a brilliant man, and he came up with a very, very famous, crazy idea, and he connected everything in the world, and he used it to explain away the Bible. Again, without God involved, and that's the reason why I'm calling him a Kofar and a Rasha. If there was God involved, then maybe it would be a little bit different. But he's not involving God, so in my mind, this is nobody out there. Either way, he went into cosmic reactions of how certain planets came into our solar system, and at certain times, this is what ended up happening. The fact he goes through how blood, the dam of the Nile River, happened because Venus's comet tail left traces of red dust in the atmosphere that allowed the water to all turn red. It's crazy ideas, and he goes through. The reason why it's bad is because he completely leaves God out of everything, where Hashem, the entire point of the Makos is to show that Hashem is in everything. But the Abarbanel uses that idea and takes it a little bit further. Meaning, again, Bilakovsky lived 100, not even, he died in like 1960, 1970, I don't know, something like that. But this guy, the Abarbanel, lived 500 years ago. He says that you can explain it, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Makah of Dam and then set off chain reactions that allowed the other Makos to happen. Since the water had been filled with blood, the frogs had to leave the river and infested all of Mitzrayim. When the frogs came out, they caused all this lice and vermin to go everywhere. When the frogs went out, it caused an ecological, there was an ecological balance, there was an issue with the ecological balance of all Mitzrayim, to which wild animals came everywhere. The wild animals coming from everywhere brought diseases from the forest, which allowed all the animals to die. And that disease for the animals, which killed them, gave the humans boils. How that caused Barad, but regardless, the idea behind it is that each one stemmed from the other. The Malbim argues in the Barbanel and says, doing that minimizes the effect and the purpose of these miracles. The whole point is that Aaron did it, that Moshe did it, that they started the Makos by the word of God, that it happened and it went through a week and it went all the way through. We don't need to have cause and effect. That's not the point. You're not trying to explain away and say, well, here's the reason for it. Now, again, I'm not arguing that Barbanel did. Barbanel was a tremendous tzaddik in his own right. But quite often he goes through a pshat to be able to understand how this could have happened in a natural fashion. And the whole point of the Makos is to say that this is not natural. They wanted to show the Egyptians there is nothing natural. If it was natural, then the Khartoumim could have explained it away. And here they say, Etzbalokimi. It's just very strange that the Abarbanel would use such a pshat to go through. So Velikovsky, I'm not even going to him. I didn't, you'll notice throughout the whole sheet, I always bold the people that I'm quoting. Nah, Velikovsky, that's not happening. He's not bolded. Right? In fact, I think I was going to do him like, my first shot was I was going to do him in like font 9 instead of font 10. You know, just to keep him like a little bit less. That was my consideration, then I forgot. But regardless, that's that. So what do we go through tonight? What was our idea? We went through what are the Kenim, what are these guys, and where do they come from? We said the Mida Kenegan Mida involved with the Kenim. We talked about how Yaakov's body, how it affected the Jews as well. We went through those ideas. We went through the Taklis, the purpose of them, or was there no purpose of them? The Onish, the punishment, what the actual punishments were, and finally, whether or not, right, we went through that Shechin, Kenim, and Choshech that go all together. Such a crazy shot. That's for the Shabbos table. We'll stop with that, everybody. Have a good Shabbos.